Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. The Mishnah is familiar to us because we just quoted it in the previous Gemara, which is, Idla Alea Tagifin. Person takes a grapevine and he pulls it on top of the sukkah, with a delat or a gourd, with a kisus or like an ivy, a crawler of some sort, and he stretches it across the top of the sukkah. Sikeich al gaba, and then he puts chach on top of it. Psula. Vim haya sikuch harbe mehen. If the schach exceeds the amount of attached that you have there, then you're okay. Or shikatsitsan. Or if you cut them, ksheira, then it works in terms of the schach. So here you have two ways to solve the problem. You have what's called mechubar, something that's attached to the ground. Being attached to the ground is posel for schach. We'll discuss why that is, that it's posel for schach. But being attached is problematic. So now, if you have this problematic schach, you can solve your problem by one of two ways. Either you cut the item, so it's no longer attached, and then we'll have to deal with the ramifications of that, which the Gemara will talk about, whether that works or not. Or, you can just put on more schach. Just put a lot more schach on top of it, and now you're in good shape. Here we have what's called mevatel lechatchila. We're allowing you to be mevatel something lechatchila. You have a problem, puzzle schach, taking out the schach and putting it on top. The Achronim, the Magen Avraham, the Taz, discuss this issue and say that it's not a problem, a mevatel iser lechatchila, because there is no iser. If you're looking at this before Sukkot, then the schach has no standing or significance before Sukkot. The only issue is, does it cast shade or doesn't cast shade when you're making sukkah? The sukkah only comes to effect when Sukkot starts. So prior to that point in time, for you to be mevatel, the schach is not an issue because it's not Sukkot and there's no iser over here. Taz goes on to explain that even on Chol HaMoed itself, it's not a problem, because the issue of Iser and Heter are not being discussed over here. It's a question of, do you have a kosher sukkah or you don't have a kosher sukkah? And that only matters once you go into the sukkah. So whatever you do prior to that is fine, because you're not being vata, anything that's asur. There's no Iser in this case. And that's why we allow you to put more kosher schach on top in order to rectify the problem. Or, of course, cutting it, which we'll discuss in the Gemara. Zeklau, here's the principle with regards to schach. Ko shu mikabel tuma, vein gidulo min aretz, ein misachachin bo. Anything that is mikabel tuma, meaning that it's a kli or an ochel, is problematic in terms of schach. Vein gidulo min aretz, and something that doesn't grow from the ground, is also problematic for schach. So therefore you can't use it. Ko davar she'ein mikabel tuma, ve gidulo min aretz, misachachin bo. Anything that has these two qualifications, which is that it grows from the ground, and it's not a finished product, so it's not mekabel tuma, that you're allowed to use for schach over the sukkah. Yotiv Rav Yosef kameid Rav Huna. Rav Yosef was sitting in front of Rav Huna, v'yotiv v'ka'amar, and he said, oshik katsitsan k'shera. That when he cuts them, it's k'shera. V'amar Rav, and now we have the qualification of this, doesn't this lead you into a problem, what's called taseh v'lo mina asui? By doing that, the schach already exists on top of your sukkah, and when you cut it, you're making the schach without it taking any action. So on that it says, V'amar Rav, tzarich lenaneya. Rav says it's not sufficient over here to simply cut the item. You have to actually shake it. You have to lift it up. You have to do some activity with the schach in order to make it into kosher schach. Amar le Rav Huna, Hashmul Amra. Did Rav really say that? Didn't Shmuel say that? So we know that Rav Huna is a Talmud of Rav. Rav Huna says, didn't Shmuel say this? So Hadrina Rav Yosef Le'ape. Yosef turned away once that happened because he was upset that he was correcting him. He said to Amarle, Atu mi kamina locha, delo amra Shmuel? Did I say Shmuel didn't say it? I just said that Rav said it. Why are you telling me that Shmuel said it? It says, Amra Rav, v'amra Shmuel. What's the issue? Rav said it and Shmuel said it. Well, no, when I said to you that Shmuel Amra, Vilo Rav. He says, when I say to you that Shmuel said it, that means, and I'm implying with that, is that Rav did not say it. And that's why I said something to you. The Rav, Akshurei Makshir. The Rav is Makshir even without doing anything. Kiha, the Rav Amram Chasido. Amram Chasido, the Rama Tchilta, the Parzuma, the Inche Beite. He used to put in Tchelet. Tchelet here is a reference to Tzitzit. The major string of the tzitzit is tchelet, so you have the white and the tchelet strings. But Rama tchilta, to place tchelet into your cloaks, into your garments of his household, That means that he made tzitzit for his household. Talan, he put them in. Velo pasak oshei chutin shelahen. But he did not cut the ends of the strings. Ata dekame de Rabchir Barashi. He went to Rabchir Barashi and asked him what to do now. Samalei, hochi amai Rav. This is what Rav says. Mifaskan v'hen k'sherin. Just cut them and you're fine. Alma, psikatan, zuhi asiatan. When you cut it, that is sufficient to be considered the asiya. Machanami, so too in our case here by the sukkah, tzitzatam, zu asiatam. The cutting of the object is enough to be considered the asiya. So let's deal with the case of tzitzit first. In terms of tzitzit, the case here is that he takes the string and he doubles it over. In order to create the 8 strings that you need for the tzitzit, instead of taking 4 independent strings and putting them into the hole and then making a tzitzit, he took 1 string and he just folded it back and forth, and then pulled it through the hole. And now he's got his 8 strings, but at the bottom they're attached. Meaning that there's only 2 ends that are open, everything else is attached. He makes the tzitzit, and then all of a sudden he goes, oh my goodness, I didn't sever the strings that I put through. So now he has all this beautiful tzitzit made, but they're attached at the bottom. So it's not really 8 separate strings in the bottom. Rav says to him, go ahead, just cut the strings. And now you have 8 separate strings, you're fine. We would argue, oh, isn't that taseh velo mina asui? Mina asui means you already have the tzitzit. You cut them, and now all of a sudden you automatically have tzitzit there. So Rav says that's not a problem. The cutting itself is the asiya. When you cut it, you've done the action. That action is sufficient to consider the asiya of the tzitzit. On the other hand, Shmuel is going to believe that that's not sufficient, that's not enough. So Gemara says, well, just like by tzitzit, that is sufficient, so too by sukkah. Tzitzatan, the fact that you merely sever the object from the mechubar, according to Rav, will be enough to classify it as schach. And now that it's schach, you're okay, because you made an asiya. Shmuel again will say that's not enough, because that's not the asiya. So what do you have to do? Tzarech le'na'aneya. You have to lift up the schach. You have to do some activity that's more significant with the schach in order to have an asiya here. So everybody agrees that taseh melo mina asui is problematic. Question is, how significant an action must you take in order to remove the problem of taseh melo mina asui? Rav says severing it, cutting it, is enough. On the other hand, Shmuel says, no, you got to do something much more significant. You got to lift it up. Now, according to Rav, where do you have a case of taseh lo mina asui is the more classic case of taseh lo mina asui, which is quotate into the gadish. You have a big pile of grain, and you just dig yourself a hole into it. So then you do that, and you make it into a sukkah by digging a hole into this pile of grain. That's taseh lo mina asui, because there they had zero asiya with regards to the schach. You took no action with regards to the schach. Over here, you're taking in a little action, and that's enough with regards to the schach. That will suffice. So here is what the machloket about taseh velo min asui, which the Gemara is going to continue to discuss. The other issue is, in terms of Rav Amram Chasida. Rav Amram Chasida over here puts tchelet into the beged of inche beite, of his family. Rashi over here says, well, who's inche beite? The talit, ishto. His wife's talit, he put in tzitzit. So now, obviously, that opens up Pandora's box. What do you mean that he put tzitzit into his wife's talit? Gemara's brought here. Gemara's also discussed in Minachot as well. Rashi over here mentions something, and Tosafot expands on this issue, and they correlate the position of Amram Chasida with another machloket in tzitzit. And that is the question of whether Laila is man tzitzit, or Laila is lav man tzitzit. Tzitzit, we know, the pasuk says, uritem oto. Uzakartem et mitzvot Hashem. You have to see them. So the Gemara has 2 drashot from Uritem Oto. The more famous drasha, which we're familiar with, is Uritem Oto, is that tzitzit have to be seen. Therefore, the mitzvah tzitzit only applies during the day. That's why you have to wait until you can see your fellow Jew 4 amot away and recognize him. So that's the amount of light that we need, Kadesh Yakir. That's the threshold for when you can put on tzitzit in the morning, because Uritem Oto. That you had the mitzvah of tzitzit is only relevant during the day. It's not relevant during the night. Whereas there is another position that uritem oto comes to exclude a suma. That only people who uritem oto can't see the tzitzit are chayavin in tzitzit. Whereas a suma, that's what Gemara says, a suma who can't see the tzitzit, therefore he's not chayav in tzitzit. That machloket has ramifications in terms of whether tzitzit is a mitzvah aseh shazman grama. If you believe that uritem oto comes simply to exclude a suma, that means that you think Laila is man tzitzit. Well, now, if Laila is man tzitzit, tzitzit are no longer a time-bound mitzvah. The mitzvah exists during the day, exists during the night, exists during the weekday, exists on Shabbat, Yom Tov. There's no longer any time where you're not chayav in tzitzit. If that's the case, it's a mitzvah that say that does not have a zman grama. It's not a time-bound mitzvah anymore. On the other hand, if you believe that laila is lav zman tzitzit, the ritem ato comes to exclude laila, then what we have is a mitzvah to say sheha zman grama. You're only chayav in tzitzit during the day. So both Rashi and Tosafot correlate this position of Rav Avraham Chasida with that other machloket, and they say that Rav Avraham Chasida believed that laila was zman tzitzit. And he believed, therefore, that it was a mitzvah to say shelo azman grama. It was not a time-bound mitzvah. That's why he put tzitzit in his wife's talit. That's why he put tzitzit in kol anshei beitei. Then, as Tosafot says, we don't hold that way. We don't believe that it's a mitzvah to say shelo azman grama. And he brings numerous proofs to that fact, including the Mishnah and Kiddushin, which enumerates tzitzit as one of the mitzvot asay shazman grama. And based on that, we wouldn't put tzitzit in a woman's talit because they would say mitzvah to say shazman grama. They're not chayavot in tzitzit. The second thing you have to discuss, and this is something we mentioned back when we did it in the Gemara and Shabbat, when we say that laila is lav zman tzitzit, what does that mean? That happens to be a machloket rishonim. Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam focus on what's called ksut laila and ksut yom. The chiyuv of tzitzit is on a daytime beged versus a nighttime beged. Your patur at night. At night doesn't mean night and day. It means that if you wear pajamas, you don't have to put tzitzit in your pajamas. You wear your clothing during the day, or you wear that same clothing at night, you have to have tzitzit in them because it's a daytime beged. On the other hand, the Rambam and the Ri in the Balei HaTosfot also seems to agree that the din is yom and laila, not ksut yom and ksut laila. You have a machloket rishonim about which is the determining factor here. Is it day and night, or is it ksut yom and ksut laila? The halacha we're choshesh for both shitot, which is that we only make a bracha when it's during the day and a daytime beged. And also, we still wear tzitzit in your daytime beged at night. And technically, if you had your pajamas on during the day, you would have to wear tzitzit as well. So we're choshesh for both shitot, but we only make a bracha when both of them are true. Then you have to ask the question about mitzvah aseh shezman grama in that case. Obviously, if you believe it's yom and laila, then it's a time-bound mitzvah. If you say it's ksut yom and ksut laila, is it still a time-bound mitzvah? Now, most of the Rishonim believe that it still is a time-bound mitzvah, even though if you wore your daytime clothing for 24 hours, you would have to keep your tzitzit on 24 hours. It's still not time-bound. It's really clothing-bound, not time-bound. Despite that fact, most think that it's a mitzvah to say shazman grama, and that's why women are not chayavot in tzitzit. Obviously, there's, in the last half century, there's been a movement amongst women to say, well, we know that by mitzvah aseh shezman grama, right, we're not chayavin, but we still have the option to perform the mitzvah. And since we have the option to perform the mitzvah, then why can't we also wear a talit? Why can't we also make a bracha on a talit, which is minhag Ashkenaz, based on the Rabbeinu Tam, that when it comes to mitzvah aseh shezman grama, if women opt into it, they can make a bracha, just like they do by shofar, just like they do by lulav. So that issue, obviously, came to the forefront. Interesting enough, when Rav Kellermer was the Rav in Young Israel Brookline many, many years ago, before he came into his current position, he writes a question to Rav Moshe Feinstein, found in Igrit Moshe. He also sent the woman to Rav Soloveitchik, from which there's the famous story with regards to Rav Soloveitchik in this issue, asking exactly this question. There was a woman in his community, wanted to put on a talit, and he wants to know what to do about this. She makes the claim that we just did, which Tzvitzer Aseh Shazman Grama, and it's optional. She can opt in, and she can make a bracha. So Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Igrit Moshe addresses the issue. He first of all differentiates between tefillin and tzitzit right away. He says that tefillin's in a different category, and that is out of the ballpark for the reasons. He speaks about the reasons over there. With tzitzit, he says that if it's not a kli gever, which is important here, if it's not a piece of clothing that men generally wear, and that makes it a problem, not because of tzitzit, but because you're not allowed to put on a woman, can't put on men's clothing. So if they have women's tzitzit that is specifically made for the women and are clothing of the women, then you might think that it would be okay. And then Rav Moshe says that he doesn't think it's right because he first of all says that he thinks that it's correlated with the women's movement. So he says that's first of all. He thinks that the women's rights movement got caught up not only just in the general populace, but now it's coming into Judaism. And the women think that they can bring this revolution into Judaism. And he thinks that it sets a very bad precedent, that the laws of the Torah can be changed to fit the times. And because of that, he writes very strongly against it, against this possibility about the Mesorah and the way that women conduct themselves. And he says that the tour of Mitzvot Aseh Shehazman Grama is not just bidiavad, it's lechatchila, that Hashem granted that dispensation to the women so they could be the primary caregivers and ensure that the children grow up properly. And that tour is not just like, okay, but if I can do it, I can't. No, that's a tour that's given full-fledged, and there's no necessity or obligation for the women to perform a mitzvah, and that we would dissuade them in this case from doing it. And he says that he doesn't think it's a good idea at all. He doesn't say that it's impossible, but he says it's unacceptable, completely unacceptable. And then Rav Soloveitchik also, and this, Rav Soloveitchik is a very famous story, that this woman, the same one I'm assuming that Rav Kelmer asked Rav Moshe about, he sent her to Rav Soloveitchik. And Rav Soloveitchik discussed it with her. He said, that's a very big step. I don't think you should do that all at once. What I recommend is that you do this slowly, which is that you first wear the talit without the tzitzit, and then afterwards you put in the tzitzit so that you do it in stages. She says, why don't we do that in stages? You come back to me in 3 months. You'll put on for the next 3 months. You put on the talit without tzitzit in it. You'll come back and then we'll discuss it again. So after 3 months, the woman comes back and tells Rav Soloveitchik, you know, I've been putting on the talit without tzitzit in it. It's really enhanced my davening. I really feel differently now. I want to progress to the next step. And so Rav Soloveitchik said, based on that, well, I see that it's not the mitzvah tzitzit that is generating this. It's obviously some exogenous variable that's doing it, because you haven't been wearing tzitzit for the last 3 months. You've just been wearing a talit with four corners and no tzitzit in it. So based on that, he assured it because he felt that it wasn't coming from the right place. It wasn't being generated from the right place. And that's an important aspect over here, which is knowing where it comes from, knowing where this issue comes from. Rav Schechter just wrote tshuva, also decrying the psak halacha of these rabbanon that say that women should be allowed to put on tefillin, and they publicize their psak. He says these are youngsters, people who don't have the right to give psak in the face of much greater poskim ahead of them, and there's a mesorah in Klal Yisrael that we behave and act in a certain way, and this is not considered to be acceptable within the mesorah, and that he thinks that they're off the field with regards to giving psak halacha to allow these women to perform this way. One of the major issues that has to be addressed in all these cases is why the women are taking up these mitzvot. Are these women who are makpid and all the mitzvot, and then this is just an addition to that? Or this is a mitzvah that they're taking up, but other ones go by the wayside? Which is a very important question to answer in these situations, to understand the motivations behind why they want to do this. The other issue you have to deal with is also this idea of privilege versus responsibility, which is that many times people feel that if a mitzvah is done by a particular individual and they're not part to it or party to it, that that's a privilege. Why should they be denied that privilege? If men have the privilege of putting on these items, then why can't women? Why are women any different? The problem is that that attitude, first of all, has major holes in it. But more importantly is that people will like to have the privileges without the responsibility. Nobody is complaining about the fact, let's say, oh, you know what? The men are getting up for slichot at 5 o'clock all through Chodesh Elul of the Sfaradim. I really, really think I want to get up for that 5 o'clock minyan. Nobody's asking for that privilege because they don't see it as a privilege. They see that as a responsibility. That people only look for mitzvot, what they see as privilege rather than responsibility, and they don't take the package together, which is that with privilege comes responsibility, and that there's a total picture here rather than single mitzvot that you're picking off and deciding that, oh, I should be equal and I should be able to do these mitzvot. So again, these are important issues or questions that have to be addressed in the context of this question. But again, Rashi and Tosafot here take that important step in matching this halacha up with the issue of mitzvot aseh shehazman grama. Right now, the Gemara says, "V'shavar Shmuel lo amrinan psikatan zuhi asiatan." Does Shmuel really say that psika is not enough? V'atani Shmuel b'shum Rabbi Chiya. He tells us two granot v'vat achat. Put the tzitzit into two corners at once. Then afterwards he cuts them, ksherim. So this seems to be a similar situation in which he drew the strings through the two corners, made the tzitzit, and then he cuts them in the middle to separate between the strings so that he has two different corners with tzitzit on them. And that would mean that psikatan is what's making the asiatan. My love, shekosher v'acharkach posek. that he tied it, and then he cut it, which would imply that the psika is enough. It says, lo, shpusik v'chakach kosher. He happened to put the strings in the holes. He didn't tie it yet. He wants to know, if I cut it now, is that okay? Can I then make the tzitzit afterwards? And then he says, yeah, posik v'chakach kosher. Sure, you can cut the strings now. You don't have to put a netilah, the whole knaf v'knaf. You don't have to put separately into each corner the strings and have them be full-fledged strings when they're in the corner. No. You can put the strings in, cut them, and now you have the strings in the two corners, and then go ahead and tie them. The tying is the important factor, not the placement into the holes of the corners. Ma'i lememra? Of course. What's the question? Sigmar says, ma'i letema, what I've thought, be'in and knaf b'shat p'til. That you have to have the corner be designated when you put the p'til, the string in. It has to be a separate corner for each string. V'lekan, you don't have that here. K'mash v'lan, then we don't worry about that. Shira is the major factor. As long as you're kosher, then once they're separate, you're okay. Meitive, talan v'lo pasak roshei chutin shelahen. Puts in, and he didn't cut the ends of the strings. P'sulim. Then they're pasul. My love, p'sulim li'olam. When I say p'sulim, what does it mean? P'sulim means it's p'sulim forever. V'tiyuf to the Rav. And that would be a strong question against Rav's position. Amar l'cha Rav, my p'sulim? P'sulim ad shivsiku. No, they're pasul until you cut them. As long as they're not cut, they're problematic. You cut them, you can solve your problem. Ushmur amar, psulim leolam. They're pasul leolam, and as you can see, we pass on the halacha like way, Tosafot at the top says, kulu amarai, kulu shitata kishmua. All the amaraim and all the shitot follow Shmuel. V'lo amar k'tzitzatan zu asiatam, v'gabi sukat zirich ninua. Says that the halacha is like Shmuel, both by tzitzit, as well as by sukkah. Chen Amar Levi, where he says, Psulim Leolam, you can't rectify this problem unless you untie them and then retie them. Chen Amar Rav Matna, Amar Shmuel, Psulim Leolam. Ike Damre, there's some that say, Amar Rav Matna, B'didi Abu Uvdo, I had this case, Atai Dekame Demar Shmuel, and I brought it before Shmuel, Amar Levi, Psulim Leolam, can't do anything about it, you gotta untie it and cut them and then redo it. Meitive Tal'an, V'acharkach Pasak Roshei Chutin Shelahen. If he put them in, the tzitzit, and then cut them afterwards, psulim. V'otanyo, and we have another brayta gabi sukkah, taseh, v'lo mina asoy. That you have to make the sukkah, and you can't have the sukkah made by itself. I mean, it can't exist passively. You have to actually take an action to make the sukkah, the schach sukkah. Mikan amru, hidla aleha tegefen, v'tadlat v'tekisus, our mishnah, zikecha gaban psula. Then it's pasul because you have a problem that these are all mechubar. So, hey chidami. What's the case here? Elaim b'shlo katzitzan. If it's a case here where he didn't cut them, ma'iriya. Mishom ta'asev lo min asui. Why is the psul? Because it wasn't made actively. It would just happen passively. Tzimik lay de mechubarim ninhu. Then the problem is that they're attached. Just say it's pasul because it's attached to the ground. Say hello b'shlo katzitzan. It must be that he cut them. Viktani psula. Even after you've cut them, it's still problematic. Mishmamina. T'lo amrina katzitzatan hu zohi asiatan. And we don't say that the cutting of them is the solution to the problem. B'tuyuvta the Rav. And it's a strong question against Rav. Because here the Braita is saying that they are pasul. That the schach is no good. And why is the schach no good? If it's mechubar, then of course it's no good because it's mechubar. But here the Braita says it's problem because of tasev lo min asui. The only way you could get to tasev lo min asui is if you detached it from the ground. And it's telling you that the detaching from the ground is not sufficient to get rid of the problem, v'taseh v'lo min asui. Amar l'cha Rav, ha'cha b'ayis kinyan, d'shalfinu shlufei, d'lo minkara asiyah didhu. He creates a asiyah that's a subpar asiyah. He says, well, they didn't really detach them. What they did was they severed them, but basically they slid them out of, shalaf means to take it out of a sheath, you know, to take a shoe, a foot out of a shoe, to take something out of a pocket or something that encompasses it. So to over here, they separated it by pulling it out, but the bark or the outer layer is still there. So they severed it on the inside or broke the branch, but it's still attached or the bark still runs between the two of them. So then Rav says, that's not enough. That's not considered to be a ktsitsa. You need an asiyah. I agree with you. Tasev on wasui is a problem. You need a full-fledged ktsitsa to get rid of the problem. You do a subpar ktsitsa, you don't have an asiyah now. And I agree that you need an asiyah in order to rectify the problem. And this is not a sufficient asiyah in order to rectify the problem. Mikom makom, talan, v'acharkach, pasak, kasha. Okay, he solved the problem with regards to sukkah, but by tzitzit, it says that they put them in, and then they cut them. And it says that it's problematic. That's still problematic for Rav. So kasha the Rav, the Gemara says kasha, it's a problem for Rav, the fact that the Braita says that. So now the Gemara says, Lema kitana'e. Let us say this is a machloket tana'im. Avar v'liktan pasul. Divri Rabbi Shimon bar Yehud Sadak, v'chkamim machshirim. It's a machloket that we'll get to later in the Masechta. You have an hadas. In order to be kosher, a hadas has to have more leaves than berries. If it has more berries than leaves, then it's not a kosher hadas. So if you remove the berries from the hadas, then you can make it into a kosher hadas. Now what happens if he came into Yom Tov and his hadas has berries on them? So then, avar v'liktan. On Yom Tov, you're not allowed to rectify the hadas because that's tikkun mano. And if you do it on Yom Tov, that would be a violation of tikkun mano. So you're making it now kosher. It wasn't kosher before the hadas, and you make it kosher on Yom Tov, that's problematic. It leads to a major machloket with regards to psik reshe, which we'll get to over there. It's one of the proofs of the Oruch, that a psik reshe, delo nechle, is mutar lachatchila. It's based on that gemara. But when we get there, we'll discuss that piece of it. But here, comes on Yom Tov, and he picks the berries off, despite the fact that he's not allowed to pick them off. What's the din? Shimon bar Yehud Tzadok says, no good. Chamim makshirim. So savrua. In the Beit Midrash, they thought, tekuli yama lulav tzerech eged. Everybody agrees that a lulav needs a binding. Be'alfinan lulav misukah. And we also learn out lulav from sukkah that tichtiv gabe sukkah taseh v'lo min asui. The locha by sukkah is that it must be made and not created after the fact. If that's true by sukkah and we extrapolate that to lulav also cannot be taseh v'lo min asui. So if you already bound the lulav and the hadas has berries in it, if you pick the berries off after the fact, you're making the lulav kosher, but after it's bound. So you're not doing the asiyah to make it. You're doing it in that form that when it's already made, now you're rectifying it. My love, but hakam iflage. That's what they're arguing about. Demanda machshir sava arminan gabe sukkah ksitzatan zu asiyatan. That we agree with Rav that ksitzah is sufficient by sukkah to solve the problem. But gabe lulav nami arminan likatiyatan zu asiyatan. So by sukkah, cutting, severing it from the ground is enough. By the hadas, picking off the berries is also sufficient in order to make it kasher, because that's an asiyah, that's sufficient asiyah. Uman de pasil, Rabbi Shimon bar Yehud Tzadok, whose pasil is like Shmuel. Severlo amrinan gabi sukkah ksitzatan zu asiyatan. That's not sufficient by sukkah to sever it. Vigabi lulav nami lo amrinan likitatan zu asiyatan. And so too, by the hadas, picking the berries is not sufficient to get you to the point where it's a kasher hadas. My sislo. Tukuli ama lo amrinan gabi sukkah ksitzatan zu asiyatan. No, nobody thinks that. By sukkah, everybody agrees with Shmuel's din, which is that you have to have a full-fledged asiyah. Tzitzah is not sufficient. V'hocha, b'meilif lulav misukkah kamiflege. The machloket is, do we learn the din of taseh v'lo min asui from sukkah to lulav? Is that din extrapolated? We know the din exists by sukkah. Does it exist by lulav? Man demach shesavar lo yofinim lulav misukkah. The one who says it's kasher, the rabbanon think we don't take the din of taseh v'lo min asui from sukkah and move it over to lulav. Man the pasul sava yaflinim lulav misukkah, and Rabbi Shimon bar Yehud Tzadok says no, that the din by sukkah taseh lo min asui also applies to lulav. That's one way to say that this machlok between Rav and Shmuel is not the machlok at Tanaim, because the Tanaim are arguing about another issue, which is whether lulav is subject to taseh v'lo min asui. V'ibaytein ma isfir lan lulav tzarich eged huliyama lo plige deyafinim lulav misukkah. Another way to view their machloket is that if you believe that lulav requires an eged, everybody agrees that we learn lulav from sukkah, and taseh v'lo min asui is problematic, not only by sukkah, but also by lulav. V'hocha b'haka miflege. This is what they're arguing about. Mar savar tzarech eged, umar savar ein tzarech eged. That's the exact machloket. Taseh v'lo min asui is only relevant if you have to bind the lulav. Otherwise, there's no asiyah by the lulav. What asiyah do you have by the lulav? You just take them. You pick them up, and you yotze in the mitzvah. If you have to make the lulav, then that asiyah is generated by putting an eged around them. So then you run into a problem of taseh lo min asui, because the eged is the thing that generates the asiyah, or the completion of putting them together. So that asiyah would now have to be done properly. All the minim would have to be kasher before you bind them, rather than after the fact. And that's the question here. Mar sabar tzarech eged. So mar sabar, you need an eged, you need to bind the three minim together. Mar sabar ein tzarech eged. And that's the machloket here, whether you need eged. If you don't require a binding, then taseh v'lo min asui is not relevant. If you do require a binding, then it is relevant to lulav. Ubeplukta dahanei tanei. And this is similar to a different machloket tanaim, about whether lulav requires eged. Right, before we step into lulav tzarech eged or not, just a quick stop here to just refresh our memories. We mentioned this already, that with regards to sukkah, and with regards to tzitzit, that the Netziv says that these are unique mitzvot, because there are hechsher mitzvah that is kotuv b'Torah. The asiyah ha-mitzvah is mentioned in the Torah. Not only is the accomplishment of the mitzvah in the Torah, but the making of the objects, the chepetz ha-mitzvah, is mentioned in the Torah. By tzitzit, it's obvious that it's there. By sukkah, based on the drasha of Chag HaSukkot, it's also written in the Torah. Now, based on that, that is why it's interesting the Gemara correlates between them. This issue of lishma, tasev lo min asui, arises in these mitzvot because of exactly that issue, that the Torah demands asiyah, demands that you make both of them. You make the tzitzit, and it makes it demands that you make the sukkah. Because of that, you have certain halachot that come up that are common to tzitzit and sukkah. One of them is this issue of tasev lo min asui, the issue of lishma. And the last one is the issue of a bracha. The Gemara, between the Rishonim and the Bavli, you come up with the fact that it's possible that you can make a bracha on making of tzitzit, and you're going to have a bracha on the making of the sukkah. We don't paskin that way. But the fact that that is entertained by these two mitzvot is a derivative of the same fact, that the asiyah itself is mentioned in the Torah, or as a demand for asiyah. And we have remnants of that today with regards to Shechiyanu. That when we make the Shechiyanu and the Sukkah, we have in mind the Binyan of Sukkah as well. There's a possibility you can make two separate Shechiyanus. You can make a Shechiyanu on the Binyan of Sukkah, and a Shechiyanu on Zman, on Yom Tov itself, and on the sitting in the Sukkah. It's a possibility. We put them together, but this issue of Asiyah min HaTorah, or this concept of Hechsher Mitzvah min HaTorah, leads to all these halachot being common between them. That's fine, but the Torah doesn't command you to make the matzah. You're right, that's a hechsher mitzvah. But he said it's a hechsher mitzvah kotuv b'Torah. That's unique status. Everything else, you're right, you have to bake matzah to eat matzah. But the Torah doesn't say, asur lehem matzot. But nobody entertains the possibility of making a bracha on baking matzahs. For that reason, if the Gemara is here talking about extrapolation from sukkah to lulav, that might really be questionable whether you really could extend it from sukkah to lulav because of exactly this issue. Is sukkah so unique, like tzitzit, that you can't extrapolate it to lulav? Or maybe because it's Sukkot and they're in a package, maybe you could put them together. But that would make it much more problematic to extend this din to lulav versus just by sukkah and tzitzit. Right now, we'll move on to the issue of lulav tzarech eged, which has huge ramifications and halachot that are paskin halacha that will shock you about the dinim of lulav tzarech eged. Right, so now we have, the Gemara says that it's the same machlok vunta dehani tanei, tetanya. We have a brayta. Lulav ben agud, ben shein agud, kasher. A lulav, whether it's bound or not bound, meaning with the other minim, it's kasher. Yehuda omer, agud kasher, shein agud pasol. Yehuda says, you need an eged. Lulav tzarech eged. My time into Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda? Yolif lekicha mi agudat ezov. He has a gzera shava lekicha lekicha. By agudat ezov, it says, k'tiv hatam lekachtem agudat ezov. It says aguda. Aguda is a bundle. How do you get a bundle? You put them together. You bind them together to get a bundle. There's also a din of lekicha with regards to the arbat minim. Malahalan ba'aguda, afkan ba'aguda. Just like over there, it's done with a binding, so to over here, it has to be done with a binding. We don't learn out one lekicha from another lekicha. Kiman azlo hadetanyo. Who does this brayta go like? Lulav mitzvah lo agdo. It's a mitzvah to bind the lulav. Vim lo agdo, kasher. But if you don't do it, it's kasher. Rabbi Yehuda says it's me'akev. Lulav tzarech eged means it needs an eged. You don't have an eged, you're not yosei the mitzvah. Rabbanan, am I mitzvah? If it's the Rabbanan, why is there a mitzvah to me'akev? They say you don't need an eged, so why is there a mitzvah to put an eged around it? Where it says, olam Rabbanan, he really is a Rabbanan, or mushum shenemar, pasuk says, ze keli van veyu. This, ze keli van veyu, hitna'eh lefanav b'mitzvot. That you should be mitna'eh before Hashem b'mitzvot. This is what's otherwise known as hidur mitzvah. So yes, lulav ein tzarich eged, meikar din, a lulav does not require an eged, but there is an aspect of hidur mitzvah to put an eged on the lulav. Alright, so now we have to deal with this in two stages. The first one is the issue of lulav tzarich eged, second one is hidur mitzvah. What does it mean that lulav tzarich eged or ein tzarich eged? What are the implications of that? Does that make any difference in the mitzvah? When you say lulav tzarich eged, does it mean it just has a binding? If it doesn't have a binding, it doesn't change anything? So that is a interesting machloket. The Baal Halachot Gedolot, in understanding this idea of whether lulav tzarech eged or ain't tzarech eged, the Baal Halachot Gedolot says something that is accepted by many of the Rishonim afterwards, and he explains this to Gemara. What does it mean that lulav ain't tzarech eged? He says that yeshlo, the requirement of having the four minim or the arba minim together means, if you have the four minim, ein makvin velo tema ad magba lekulei behadei hadadi lo nafik. Don't say that he needs to pick up all four of the minim together in order to be yotzei. Ella If you take each one of the minim separately, you're fine. Tekaimalon, lulav, ain't tzarech eged. Because we believe lulav does not require an eged. What the Baal Halacha Gedolot sees here is, lulav tzarech eged means, I must take all three minim, I mean aside from the etrog, but the etrog separately with them, together. And lulav ain't tzarech eged means, I don't have to take the minim together. I could take them one by one. There's no requirement to take all the minim together. That's the definition of lulav tzarech eged or ain't tzarech eged.
He interprets eged not as a binding.
Well, he does interpret it as a binding, but he says the binding is because you must take them together. He says that's what eged tells you. Eged tells you that the way you must take them is together. You use eged to functionally do that. Whereas if you don't require an eged, you don't have to take them together. The Rabbeinu Tam explains it the way we would have understood it. The Rabbeinu Tam says, you know what lulav tzarech eged means? If you take the lulav, you have to bind it. Lulav ain't tzarech eged, you know what that means? You take all the meaning together, you just don't have to bind it. That would be the simplest way to read it. Most of the Rishonim follow the position of the Baal Halachot Gedolot. And that leads to more and more Chidushim built on top of this Baal Halachot Gedolot. For instance, the issue of what happens if you don't have all four of the minim. Can you take the minim separately? So the answer is no, because it says v'lekachtam lechem, that you require a lekichat tama, that you must take a full lekichat. That lekichat tama demands that you have all four of the minim. But, as we just said now, it doesn't mean that you have to have all four minim in your hand, it just means they have to be in front of you. How in front of you have to be, also the Rishonim discussed. Does it mean literally in front of you, or if you have them in your house, it's enough? That's one step. The next step is, we know that when it comes to the drushot on the word lekichat, they only apply to B'yom HaRishon, the Kichat Tama. So the Or Zeruah is Mechadesh, that on Yom Sheni of Sukkot, where all the special halachot of B'yom HaRishon fall away, that also falls away. And that means if you just have one of the minim on the second day of Yom Tov, pick it up, make a bracha, and you're Yotze. You don't need all four minim on the second day of Yom Tov. That's the way the Or Zeruah paskins. In addition to that, we have Rishonim that suggest, like the Raivut, that if you take each of the minim separately, you make a separate bracha on each of the minim. You make a bracha al nitilat lulav. Then you make a bracha of al nitilat adas. Right? Al nitilat etz avot. You make a separate bracha on each one of the minim. Because each one is a separate entity when you pick them up. There are others, they're quoted, the Hagot Mamonio quotes, that only sach ben daim, if you spoke between them, you took the first minim and then you talked after you made the bracha. Do you have to make another bracha now because you spoke and you interrupted between doing them? Maybe you have to make a bracha on each of the minim. That is the way the Rishonim deal with this. Lehalacha, you'll be surprised to find out what the Shulchan Aruch says, the halacha, and this is the way we pass on the halacha. Shulchan Aruch says, Daldi milim halalu, makvim zedzeh.
If you're missing one, you can't make a bracha. You need all of the minim together. He says, "V'im arba tam mitzuyim etzlo." If all of them, four of them, are found in front of him, and he takes them one at a time, yatsa, no problem. You accomplish the mitzvah of lulav of abarta minim. You do not have to take them all four together. You could take them one at a time, and you go to the mitzvah. Now, obviously, that's bidyabad because the better way to do it is lulav tzarech eged. And if you view eged in that way, is to take them together, then the better mitzvah is to take them together.
So not theoretically, practically. You pick up the lulav in the morning, you're yotze. You don't have to even bring the yesod together with you.
Right. That leads to a secondary question, which is this issue of hiddur mitzvah. What is the interplay between hiddur mitzvah and ikar mitzvah? Now over here, if lulav tzarech eged, for instance, what happens in the morning? You went ahead and you took all of the separate minim, and then later on you found a lulav that's bound together. Now when you take the lulav bound together, can you now do that mitzvah? And can you make a bracha on that mitzvah again? Can you make another bracha on the mitzvah? So this question comes up in an issue of hiddur mitzvah. What is the interplay between hiddur mitzvah and the ikar mitzvah? Is hiddur mitzvah an independent mitzvah that exists outside of ikar mitzvah? Or is hiddur mitzvah an extension of the core mitzvah? That means that if you're not doing the core mitzvah, you can't do hiddur mitzvah. The briskers say that that is the position of the Rambam, that hiddur mitzvah is an integral part of the mitzvah itself, and you can't have hiddur mitzvah separate from the mitzvah itself. That leads to a number of piskei halacha in the Rambam. First of all, in terms of brit milah. By brit milah, when someone's given a brit, we have what's called tzitzin ha-me'akvin and tzitzin she'e'makvin. Those are pieces of flesh that are ma'akev the milah and not ma'akev the milah. Gemara says that as long as you're engaged in the milah, you can go back both on the tzitzin ha-me'akvin and tzitzin she'e'makvin. But if you're not engaged in the milah, you can only go back for the tzitzin she'e'makvin. Generally, according to almost all the Rishonim, that's referring to Shabbat, when you're doing a Shabbat. On a weekday, you'd go back either way, because there's no problem of going back. The Rambam says it's halacha even on a weekday. Why does the Rambam say once you've stopped doing the milah, going back on the tzitzin shei makvin is meaningless? They explain that the Rambam believes that hiddur mitzvah is only meaningful in the context of the ikar ha-mitzvah and the performance of mitzvah itself. Once you've stopped doing the milah, to go back for the tzitzin shei makvin is meaningless. You're doing a hiddur mitzvah without a core mitzvah that you're doing. Same thing comes out with Nerot Chanukah. By Nerot Chanukah, can you have hiddur mitzvah separate from the mitzvah itself? For instance, if you light the first candle and you didn't have extra candles, later on in the night you get extra candles, and now you have more candles that you can light and do the hiddur mitzvah. Can you make a bracha when you have those additional candles? Ruki Vager and others suggest that maybe you could make a bracha on those additional candles. Or you forgot to make the bracha, and then you only remember when you're lighting the second or third candle. Can you make the bracha then? Is that still over your asiyatan with regards to the lighting of the candles? So together, to me, Mitzarif, other reasons why you could make the bracha, Shuvas Rabbi Ki Vager, he wants to say that you can make a bracha in that case. But that would indicate that the hiddur mitzvah is strong enough that it's still good enough to make a bracha on it. But they also explain the machlok between the Rambam and the Ramah with regards to what is mahadrin min mahadrin in Nerot Hanukkah. According to the Rambam, it's the Baal HaBayit lights for the number of people in the house. He lights for everyone in the house. Why? Because the Rambam says you can't separate between the ikar mitzvah, which is Nerisha Beito, and the hiddur mitzvah. So the Baal HaBayit's got to do all of them. Ramah says that everybody lights their own candles because that's the hiddur mitzvah. Neri Shabeto, one person does. Anybody could do that. First one who lights basically does Neri Shabeto. But after that, the hiddur mitzvah is still strong enough that each person can light separately. Has an issue with regards to chinuch. We are mechanic in ikar mitzvah, we're not mechanic in hiddur mitzvah. So if each person lighting is just the hiddur mitzvah separate from the ikar mitzvah, then you wouldn't be mechanic children to light. On the other hand, if you think it's a completely self-sustaining mitzvah, then you would be mechanic children with regards to hiddur mitzvah. And even children that were not of age, you would tell them to light separately on the nights of Chanukah. This has ramifications. That's true. Although, again, the Briskers who discuss this in the Grizz on the Rambam actually says that the hiddur mitzvah of Chanukah is different than other hiddur mitzvah because there's a requirement of hiddur mitzvah ad shlish. Until one-third, meaning that you have to add in capital in order to do it. The Maran Baba Kama limits that to a shlish. So he says, by definition, by Chanukah, it's above a shlish. And therefore he says, when it's under a shlish, it's an obligation to do the hiddur mitzvah. Above a shlish is completely optional. And therefore he says the hiddur mitzvah of Chanukah is completely voluntary. It's not even the chatchila anymore. It's called mahadrin min mahadrin because that's exactly what it is. It's optional. It's not the chatchila. He says that when it's under a shlish, the cost of hiddur mitzvah, then it becomes the chatchila. That it should do it. You must do it, or if you can do it, you must do it. But once it exceeds that value, then it's optional. Which comes back to the question. A lot of the achronim, it's found a little bit in the Rishonim as well, try to separate by trying different types of hiddur mitzvah. That there are hiddur mitzvah that is integral to the mitzvah, and there's hiddur mitzvah that is outside the mitzvah. For instance, in our case over here, by the Arbat Aminim, the Eged might be hiddur mitzvah that's integral to the mitzvah. Getting a nicer lulav, getting nicer Arbat Aminim, also might be a hiddur mitzvah. Or how you do the Eged, what you use for the Eged, that also might be something that's external versus internal. So you can have different aspects of the mitzvah. For instance, by Chanukah, the Nerot Chanukah require a hiddur mitzvah, which means oil. Use olive oil instead of candles. Then also, you have to use a nice Chanukiah. That's also part of hiddur mitzvah. So all these different aspects of hiddur mitzvah, some of them might be integral to the mitzvah, some of them might be independent of the mitzvah, and it might depend on what the hiddur mitzvah is. So many express it in that way, that you have to look at each hiddur mitzvah. Now, that leads to a very interesting shiloh, but that will leave hiddur mitzvah behind in two aspects. It comes up with etrog. Is if you have an etrog that is kosher, and then you have another etrog that is mehudar, but it's a safek pasul. Which etrog should you take first? You have an etrog that's completely kosher, and you have an etrog that's safek pasul, but it's more mehudar. Which one you take first? So in this case, based on what we're saying now, it's better to take the etrog that's safek pasul first, and then the kosher afterwards. Because if you pick up the kosher, you already yotze the mitzvah of etrog, then to pick up the other etrog that's more mehudar is a meaningless act. Because the hiddur mitzvah has to be connected to the ikar mitzvah. So based on that, the Beis Halevi says that he thinks you should pick up the etrog that's safek pasul first, and then only take the one that's badai kasher, because you need to have the ikar mitzvah together with it. It also comes up with regards to, if a person went ahead and damaged someone's etrog, they ruined the person's etrog. This person bought a beautiful etrog. It wasn't just the basic core mitzvah of an etrog, he got a hiddur. Does the person who damaged the etrog have to replace it? The poskim over here seem to indicate that he only has to replace the etrog, that the guy can be yotzei the mitzvah. He's not obligated to provide him with the hiddur mitzvah. The hiddur mitzvah is something nice that he did, but it's not the obligation. When he caused him the damage is that now he can't do the mitzvah of etrog. If he supplies him with an etrog that he can do the mitzvah with, he's taking care of the damage that he's done. And he does not have to provide a mitzvah etrog behiduro. That is not the din of the mitzvah. So there the pasuk says, if after the holiday the etrog's worth more because it was nicer and da-da-da-da, then he would have to pay for it. But that's only because the integral value of the etrog was higher, but not because of the hiddur mitzvah aspect. All right, that's just a little touch of hiddur mitzvah. I'll send out the makorot so that you can look at lulav tzarech eged, and you can also look at the issue of hiddur mitzvah. Right now the Gemara says, Zaklal, kol davar shemekabel tumah, minahane mile. Where do you know this from? This din that we know, that's the core din of schach and the sukkah, where do you know it from? Marish lakash hamakorah, ve'ed yaleh min haaretz, that the cloud rose, or the moisture rose from the ground. Ma'ed davar shenu mekabel tumah v'yidulo min haaretz. Just like a cloud rises from the ground and it's not mekabel tumah, av sukkah davar shei mekabel tumah v'gidulo min haaretz. So too, a sukkah has to be the same way. What does this have to do with sukkah? Mar says, Hanicha l'man damar anenei akavoda. That works well according to one who says that when Hashem says that you should sit in Sukkot because I took you out of Mitzrayim and I put you in Sukkot, what Sukkot was he talking about? So there's a machloket here we're going to see between the Tanaim. Is it clouds? He put you in the clouds of glory, or did he put you in Sukkot mamash? So if he put you in clouds of glory, then I understand why I would learn from clouds the din of Sukkah. And in Yerushalmi, it actually says, that's machloka between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as to where clouds come. Do the clouds come up from the ground or come down from up above? Based on that, it actually follows their shita over here. So Reish Lakish, okay, anich l'mandamar nenei kavariyo, l'mandamar sukkot mamasha sulahem ma'ika l'meimar. According to the one who says it's real Sukkot, what do clouds have to do with the Sukkot? The Tanya, ki bas Sukkot shavti et Bnei Yisrael. I put Bnei Yisrael into Sukkot when I took him out of Mitzrayim. Ananei akavoda you divrei Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says, you know what Sukkot? Those are the clouds of glory that surrounded them. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Sukkot mamasha sulem. No, they sat in huts to protect themselves from the elements. So anicha the Rabbi Elazar, the Rabbi Akiva, Maika the Meimar. Yata Rabbi Dimi, I'm Rabbi Yochanan Makra. The pasuk says, chaga Sukkot taseh lecha. Make a sukkah l'chagiga. This is the lima that we had before. It's interesting here that the Gemara brings a different pasuk for this. Earlier on, it used a different pasuk to connect between them. Chag sukkot taseh lecha, make a sukkah l'chagiga. Ma chagiga davar she'enu mikabel tumah, v'gidulo min haaretz. Just like the chagiga is a davar she'en mikabel tumah, and it's gidulo min haaretz, referring to animals. Av sukkah davar she'en mikabel tumah, v'gidulo min haaretz. So too, the sukkah has to have that same trappings with regards to the schach. All right, so you're telling me that the chagigah is live animals. You also can use animals. Now, I don't think the Gemara means that you put a live animal on top as your schach, but rather it means that you take like a skin. Why can't you use or as your schach? So why is it called gidulo min haaretz? It's because by maser sheni, the Torah says that you can use the monies of maser sheni to purchase items in Yerushalayim. If you redeem the Maaser Sheni, take it up to Yerushalayim, those monies, and purchase Yerushalayim, you can purchase certain items. The Gemara learns from that it's a klal u'pratu klal. Klal u'pratu klal has pre-mi-pri, has to be something that reproduces, number one, and number two is, it has to be gidulo min haaretz, it has to grow from the ground. And over there, the Gemara says that you can buy shlamim with it. So shlamim are classified, or animals are classified as gidulo min haaretz, because they graze and they eat from the ground. So now, the Tosafot takes that issue up here and says that the Gemara is not consistent with this. Sometimes it says animals are gidulo min haaretz, sometimes it says they're not gidulo min haaretz. The Tosafot distinguishes between something that is, I would phrase it this way, a product of the land and produce of the land. An animal is certainly not produce of the land. It is a product of the land. So if the demand is for a product of the land, then a behemoth would qualify. If it's a demand for produce of the land, then a behemoth does not qualify, and that's why we'll see different dinim. In certain dinim, it's considered gidulo min haaretz. In other dinim, it's considered not to be gidulo min haaretz. Depends what the demand is. If the demand is produce, it's not. And like Shaul said, you don't make a bari pradama on animals. And then if the demand is simply gidulo min haaretz, that is a product of the land, a behema qualifies. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan suggests over here, that even throws or animal skins would be fine to use for your schach. Now we have a different memra on the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that this is the source for schach, which is be'aspecha migorncha migveka. That when you gather together your goren and your yekev, bifsolet goren v'yekev akadu medaber. It's speaking about the residual of the goren and the residual of the yekev. Ve'ema goren atzmo v'yekev atzmo. Who says that you're talking about the psolet? Who says you're not talking about the real item itself? That you put on the schach, you put the goren and the yekev as the schach. So I'm Reb Zera yekev tiv. Wait a minute, what are you thinking? Yekev, what's the produce of the yekev of the press? Is wine. You can't make wine into schach. Wine is not schach because it's a liquid. Since it's a liquid, it can't be schach. So you can't be talking about the actual produce that you get out of the goren or out of the yekev, which would be the grains or the yayin. It's rather what's left over after you've taken out the grains and after you've taken out the wine. What's left over you use as schach. Gemara says, since yekev is wine, yefshar l'sachek both, and they can't be talking about the wine itself or the goren itself. Matzki flav Rabbi Yirmiya, fema yayin karush, who says you can't get wine on top. Let the wine coagulate. You have hardened wine. Abami sneer. They had this type of wine that came from sneer. And it was this hardened wine, this coagulated wine. Shudome le'igule de'vela. It's like the equivalent of pressed figs. And that you could use to cover the sukkah. Amar Zera ha mil to have a biyodon. We had this great limud that was brought from Rabbi in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. And at Rabbi Yirmiya, shada be'naga. And Rabbi Yirmiya comes here and throws an axe in it, meaning that he ruined this beautiful drusha that we have. Now he came and ruined it. Ravashi Amar, migarncha, velo goren atzmo, migvecha, velo yekev atzmo. And Ravashi solves the problem and says, no, you have to take from the goren, but not the goren itself. Migvecha, from the yekev, but not the yekev itself. So you have to take the solet and not the object itself, because the yekev, the wine is the produce, is the yekev. But the yikvecha means something that comes from the yekev, but it's not the yekev itself. I mean, it's what comes out of the press, but not what the yekev itself, which is the wine. And it's the goren, as Rashi says, goren means the ochel. So that you can't take the goren itself, but you can take whatever is made by the goren. What's made by the goren? That's the psolet goren. So that's the way Ravashi learns it. Vavchista mari ocha, and this is something I mentioned earlier when we discussed the schach, is from the pasuk in Nehemiah. Rashi quotes it from Ezra, which Rashi does all over Shas. It used to be that Ezra and Nehemiah were a single sefer. So even when he quotes Pesukim from Nehemiah, he quotes in the Shem of Ezra. The Kiv Eger says, no, well, because the Gemara says that the Iker Devarim of Nehemiah came from Ezra. But the truth is that it was one book at one time, and that's why Rashi is quoting it from Ezra, but it is from Nehemiah, which is, Tzu Ahar, Veviu Alei Zayid, Valei Eitz Shemin, Valei Hadas, Valei Tamarim, Valei Eitz Avot. These are the items that you need to bring in. It's there, it's talking about Sukkot. It says, go out onto the mountains and collect all of these items. We understand what the Eitz Avot are for. We understand what the Tamarim are for. We understand what the Hadas are for. Those are the Arbat HaMinim. That's for the Lulav and the Minim. But the other items, the Alei Zayit, the Alei Shemen, what are you going to do with that? That's for the Tzchach of the Sukkah. Now Gemara asks, Hainu Hadas, Hainu Eitz Avot. Don't we say that Hadas and Eitz Avot are the same thing? Aren't they synonymous? So then why do you have both of them there? So I'm Rav Chista, Hadas Shoteh, the Sukkah, Eitz Avot, the Lulav. Yes, there are two species of Hadas. There's Hadas, which is kosher for Lulav, and that's Eitz Avot. That's the one where the leaves are in triplets around it, and they go up like chains on the Hadas. Then there's Hadas Shoteh. The Hadas Shoteh is where they're not in a chain around it. The leaves are all over the place, randomly placed on it. That's Hadas Shoteh. That's not good for the Arbat HaMinim, but that is good to use as schach. So it's mentioning both items. The pasuk mentions things that are good for schach and things that are good for the Arbat HaMinim. You see there from the pasuk in Nehemiah what they're using for their schach. And the items that they're using for their schach are things that are gidulom in aretz and sheinu mekabel tuma. Okay, we'll stop over here.